Rumpus time is over.
There's a new sheriff in town.
Luke's crazy.
Did you hear that, Brian?
Luke, we're gonna have company!
Brian! Bad guys of the galaxy, beware! The defender of the universe is here!
In order to form a more perfect union.
Luke! Brian!
Luke Bryan's!
One margarita, two margarita, three margarita shot.
Stop that! You're not going into a song while I'm here.
And now for something completely different.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Talking Heads.
Hello and welcome to a Tuesday edition of Dueling Tangents. I'm Luke Mathers.
Brian, doing a little of the heavy lifting overtime work at an undisclosed location on this Tuesday afternoon, so flying the tangent ship solo, I am, but not without the helpful assistance by Evan on the board. E, how you doing this Tuesday afternoon?
I am always here for you, Lucas. I'm always here.
Appreciate that, man. Excellent hard work you're doing behind the scenes as well. So thank you very much for making sure this great show goes out over the Civic Media airwaves. If you want to learn more about Civic Media, head over to the website. You can learn all about the stations we are broadcasting on this Tuesday afternoon. Civicmedia.us. You're listening to the program broadcasting from the Solidarity Realty Studios on Madison's Near West Side on Devil Radio 92.7 FM, WTTN 1580 AM. On the Shaw in Waukesha, WAUK 540 AM and 101.1 FM, as well as Civic Media stations around the state of Wisconsin. And Evan, it's an interesting day. We got a Tuesday full of tangents, so we're gonna get to all these headlines breaking across the state of Wisconsin. It's the final day of January. We're speeding quickly into the month of February, and
what you got? Hit me with it.
It's
what you got?
Well, I want to let the listeners know as well. We're going to be joined at 2:30 by Dan Schaefer of the Recombobulation area. So Dan going to be joining me, kicking around some of these tangents and sharing what he's been working on over at his column to hopefully help recombobulate us after we jump from tangent to tangent here. But Evan, did you hear the latest totals or how much money was spent in the Wisconsin governor's race last November?
No, I haven't, but... No. Hit me with it, man.
I thought I was ready. They broke earlier today, and do you have a guess? Do you want to ballpark how much you think the previous record was set at right around 90? Let me pull it up real quick. I want to say it was around in the 90s. And that was the record set in 2018 when Evers first ran against then-incumbent Governor Scott Walker. And I want to say it was right around $96 million. Guess what this year's total was?
I don't want to deflate the balloon, you know? I mean, it's kind of high, but I'm going to say, nearly a quarter billion.
Nearly a quarter billion. Not quite that high.
Well, good. Thank you.
Not that quite high. it is getting up there, though, compared to what was previously spent in cycles before this year. So $93.1 million was the record set in 2018, and that was when Evers first ran against then-incumbent Scott Walker, now former Governor Scott Walker. And the record is now anew after the 2022 gubernatorial spending record is all accounted for. All the receipts have been tabulated, Evan, and $164.3 million spent.
That's not a lot better. Let's be real. Yeah, maybe I overshot it a teeny bit, but this isn't much better.
No, yeah. You were $250 million is not that far out of the ballpark from $164. And so we spent almost, it was a 75% increase over 4 years. If this trend continues, Evan, your guess of $250 million will be pretty accurate for 2026.
We'll be there in no time.
It's getting pretty obscene how much money is being spent on these races by the candidates and outside special interest groups, Evan. And this this is a new analysis from our friends over at the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign. Executive Director Matt Rothschild joins us frequently here on Dueling Tangents and across the Civic Media Network on numerous other shows. But the work out by Wisconsin Democracy Campaign being noted over at the Wisconsin State Journal, Mitchell Schmidt writing up the headline, "Last year's Wisconsin governor's race shattered spending records." This out over at the State Journal. And it's just incredible because the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign reported today, Tuesday, that spending in last year's gubernatorial election topped out at 77% higher than the almost $93.1 million spent in the 2018 governor's race. Spending last year was double the roughly $82 million spent in the 2014 governor's race. So with it less than 10 years, two cycles apart, 8 years apart, the spending for the gubernatorial race doubled here in the state of Wisconsin.
Oof.
It is just obscene, Evan. And the fact that this is the amount of money that's now being spent here in Wisconsin, which we know is a critical battleground state. We have these shows where we're building out a network to be able to reach more Wisconsinites because Wisconsin voters do play a pivotal role in both the state and the national narratives when it comes to electoral politics. And we are already in a cycle, the next cycle. We are currently 3 weeks out.
Perpetual. forever and ever.
Just one of those things where you see somebody like falling up and down the escalator. Well, not really up, but you fall down and you just continue to fall down as you're just going and going and going in this loop. Because yes, 3 weeks from today, Wisconsin voters will again go to the polls and be voting in a primary for the Wisconsin State Supreme Court that, according to experts, is also going to break records. Because Molly Beck over at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel also has a piece out, "Wisconsin's Supreme Court election could be the most expensive in history. Here's what's at stake in the closely watched race." And so we already just super exceeded expectations with spending in the gubernatorial race. And now here in Wisconsin, we are set to see even more spending at historic levels for the state Supreme Court race.
We joke about it a lot, but this is actually an important race. It's sort of crucial to our future, you could say. I literally sat down last night and I watched like over 2 hours of, you know, Ms. Doro's trial that she just proceeded over.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, the celebrity judge. She's getting a lot of clout, a lot of accolades for just being a judge.
There's a lot of... So to lay the groundwork for,
she didn't violate this man's rights. She gets that. I'll say that. But otherwise, she was just being a judge.
And you're saying in the Darryl Brooks Jr. case that was nationally televised last fall, leading up to the conviction of Darryl Brooks Jr. for the atrocities committed at the Waukesha Christmas Parade back in 2021.
And my patience would have ran thin, I'll admit, if I was in her position, having to deal with Mr. Brooks, which was, that was rough. It was rough to watch. It was rough to watch. And it would have been worse to, you know, preside over. But
It's going to be very interesting. The groundwork for this election, there are four candidates, two conservative-leaning, two liberal-leaning. Hopefully, me just describing that scenario doesn't get anybody to try to file a complaint against me for describing those candidates that way, because there is a complaint against one of the justices. We're going to get to that in an upcoming segment. But the fact of the matter is, two conservative-leaning candidates, two liberal-leaning candidates. And it seems like the infighting among the conservative candidates is only getting more heated up, Evan, because
nationally too. Well, I mean, it's wild.
So I have a friend from high school. We knew each other back in high school. He is a conservative-minded individual, and he works closely on the organizing side of GOP politics here in the state of Wisconsin. And he is out for one of the two conservative candidates, and there's some bad blood between the fact that Doro and Kelly are running against each other for the conservative lane of this Wisconsin Supreme Court race. And so I have a feeling this is going to be a pretty ugly couple of weeks between now and the February 21st primary, 3 weeks from today, in fact. And I have a feeling there's going to be a lot coming out. We've already seen some of the headlines. We've discussed those here on these airwaves. I know other shows have as well. But it is going to be an all-out battle for the two spots that will remain in this race beyond Tuesday, February 21st. The two candidates with the highest vote total, it is not a partisan primary. This is a nonpartisan race. But the two highest vote getters are going to move on to the general in April, on April 4th. And there's some infighting between the sides that you would believe would be the conservative candidates. But you're also seeing jabs, and we'll get to this story that I first found today over at WisconsinWisPolitics.com. Complaint alleges Protasiewicz violated judicial code with comments on redistricting and abortion. As Brian and I discussed on the air yesterday during Dueling Tangents, which if you missed any portion of that show, you can go over to the Civic Media website and check out the podcast. But there are candidates that are projecting which way they would vote, and that's how all candidates work. We've pretty much done away with this belief that this is a nonpartisan race. Different candidates historically have been backed by parties. As far back as Republicans, the state party, Republican Party, coordinating with conservative candidates in Supreme Court races, when that was supposed to be a no-no. And now an individual here in Wisconsin, from Barron County, alleged in a complaint last week, and coordinating with the state GOP in filing this complaint, cites comments that Protasiewicz made about redistricting at a WisPolitics.com forum and abortion during a TV interview violates the judicial code of conduct that judges are supposed to be sworn by, and this nonpartisan race is expected to be administered through. And so it's going to be a very, very interesting. I have a feeling this isn't going to be a complaint that goes anywhere. But the fact that these complaints are coming through, very, very, very interesting. We've seen in past races for specifically Milwaukee County Executive, people be removed from the ballot with complaints like this. And so this will be something to keep an eye on. Folks, you're listening to Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian. If you missed any portion of if you could definitely check out the podcast, but you could share a tangent on this Tuesday afternoon, 844-967-2789. Going to be joined by Dan Schaefer coming up at 2:30, so get those calls in soon. Welcome back to Dueling Tangents. I'm Luke Mathers. If you'd like to follow the show on Twitter, at Dueling Tangents, you can also follow the network there, Civic Media, at Civic Media US. You can tweet us your tangents. You can also call or text those tangents, 844-967-2789. Evan, that one's getting played because Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania, coming up soon. And so every time I see the trailer, it's stuck in my head. It's there. It's just stuck constantly. And really looking forward to the start of a dynasty, as the ads are alluding to with Kang the Conqueror. But we covered already. The gubernatorial spending limit has been broken. The spending record in a Wisconsin gubernatorial race has been shattered. And when we talk about Wisconsin elections, it's hard not to discuss the fact that for the better part of the last 2 years, certain actors here in Wisconsin politics tried to play up suspicions in just the littlest little inclinations of anything.
Who are you who could you be talking about?
Robin Voss.
Oh, okay. All right.
The Republican-led state legislature.
Ringing a bell.
Former state Supreme Court Michael Gableman.
There's that.
who I still... I would love to see the audits of that special counsel's office.
Oh, man.
As
Morty,
as
I hope there
to.
Are tapes.
Oh, the receipts... He had some receipts, but I'm sure there's a lot of receipts that are not there. But Michael Gableman ran roughshod across the state of Wisconsin for almost 2 years. And was casting dispersions, making it seem like there was not a secure election system. Wisconsin voters can no longer use drop boxes to drop off absentee ballots, a practice that was widely administered in the state of Wisconsin before Republicans lost in 2020 and used it as a punching bag to act like they were cracking down on voter fraud, when really they were just making it more difficult for Wisconsinites to vote. And so, interestingly enough, there's a piece over, again, at wispolitics.com. Elections Commission staff cite human error for a handful of election machine mistakes. Now, Evan, this article published earlier today over at wispolitics, it's an interesting headline. It still kind of leads to make it seem like there were human errors, that maybe our elections weren't so safe. But Evan, a state-directed hand audit of nearly 222,000 ballots cast in the November election to check the accuracy of the voting equipment found just 6 errors.
It's the entire point. I mean, to check on the veracity of these claims, it costs a lot of money. It takes a ton of energy. I mean, it's sort of the point, you know? It's easy to lie when to rebut with the truth takes so much longer. You know, a lie has traveled 3 times around the world before the truth has a chance to put its pants on.
Yeah. Do you understand? 222,000 ballots, 6 errors. But those...
That seems pretty good.
Apparently, those could be enough to fall short of a federal standard. So that's not perfect. 6 out of 222,000 is still 6, but a minuscule amount. It would not change the flow of an election, especially if the election's margin, say, like in 2020, was more than 20,000 votes.
Yeah.
That discrepancy number is not going to make a difference. But and I completely agree. It is very costly process to make sure that these machines are doing the right thing, but it's also an important process. Audits of our votes should be done. We should be making sure that there is accuracy here, but the fact that for 2 years, the Republicans here in Wisconsin made it seem like there was the deep state cabal flipping votes and absentee ballots being requested and filled out without any trace, just this magical little dark boogeyman of voter fraud. And even in the 2022 fall election, of an audit of 222,000 ballots, 6 errors, and the Wisconsin Elections Commission staff chalk those issues up to human error and are urging commissioners not to consider any of them in determining how well the equipment performed. So this isn't even the voter equipment that malfunctioned. It was user error on those 6 errors. So it is baffling to me how this has just gone away into the night, that Michael Gableman is not being held accountable, that it is just acting like it didn't even happen, that Republicans were for 2 years screaming voter fraud, and now that we're beyond the midterm elections, nothing's being done about this. Nobody's saying boo about voter fraud. Because, what, Ron Johnson won his race? Tony Evers had a wide enough margin?
That's exactly why.
So it was a political prop then. It was literally a political prop. They were not trying to make Wisconsin's elections more secure. They weren't trying to make it more streamlined. They were making it harder for people to vote. And that was their main goal. They were trying to make it harder for people to vote. There is no attempt here to better improve the way our state runs the elections. They simply wanted to use the issue as a guise to make it harder to vote in the state of Wisconsin. Folks, you're listening to Dueling Tangents. I'm Luke Mathers, going to be joined by Dan Schaefer of the Recombobulation Area coming up. If you want to join the show, 844-967-2789. You can call or text. You can also tweet at the show at Dueling Tangents. And we're going to try to get recombobulated a little bit here, coming up with some stories from Milwaukee and around the state with Dan Schaefer. Stay tuned. You're listening to Dueling Tangents on Civic Media. Welcome back to Dueling Tangents. I'm Luke Mathers. You're listening to The Tangents across Civic Media here in Madison Devil Radio, the Shaw in Waukesha, locally grown radio in Wisconsin Rapids, Lake Air in Amory, Oshkosh Air Support in Oshkosh, WGBW in Green Bay, and News from the Center in Richland Center. And on this Tuesday afternoon, I am now joined by Dan Schaefer of the Recombobulation Area. Dan, how you doing today?
Doing well, Luke. Thanks so much for having me on the show.
Thanks so much for being here today and reaching out, because I've been a little underwater as we've added some stations, getting a lot of work done, adding members to the Civic Media team, and I've been waiting to recombobulate, and you reached out yesterday, and I was like, perfect. Dan is like interested in coming on the air. Perfect. This is going to be set for a Tuesday afternoon conversation. We can kick around some of the Wisconsin headlines and hopefully recombobulate when it's all said and done.
I could tell you were discombobulated, so it's a good thing I reached out. I just sensed it, you know, sensed some sort of discombobulation on your end, you know.
Oh, wow. If my discombobulation was emitting all the way to you in your neck of the woods, that means, oh yes, I was long due for some recombobulation. Well, really glad that you're able to join me on this Tuesday afternoon. And we've got numerous tangents that we can jump to. So the one we kicked off the show with, I'd love to get your take on it. We now see the spending in a gubernatorial race here in Wisconsin was shattered. The record for that amount of spending, our friends over at the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign putting out a report today showing a 77% increase from 2018, with $164 million spent between the candidates and outside groups. What do you think about the state of governor's races here in the state of Wisconsin? Is this going to be kind of just a continuing trend, or was 2022 an outlier because we had a millionaire from Connecticut that decided he wanted to spend a lot of money in this race?
Man, it is just staggering to see these figures, isn't it? It's $164 million being spent on one governor's race. You know, we kept hearing throughout the campaign that it was going to be the most expensive race for governor anywhere in the country. I'm sure it will. The numbers will bear that out. Not only is a record in Wisconsin, I think it will probably be the most expensive anywhere in the country for the 2022 midterm cycle. But it is just staggering. And you look at the chart that the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign put out, you know, you go back to kind of the pre-Citizens United decision on these campaigns. The 2006 and 2010 races came in at less than $40 million. And now we're getting north of $160 million. So quite the change from, you know, less than 15 years ago.
Yeah, it's a very stark comparison when you put that demarcation line on that graph. Very similar to the disapproval numbers of U.S. Senator Ron Johnson in the launch of the Recombobulation Area. Similar,
that's right.
Similar coordination there in those graphs when you're analyzing them.
That's right. Once people started to learn more about Ron Johnson, they liked him less. And I am taking no credit actually for that, but there is some correlation there between the timing.
The science is out on it still. We'll have to do a little further studying of whether or not those two things are coordinated. But the amount of money that was spent is amazing. It's pretty interesting to take a look at these organizations. So this includes candidate spending and outside group spending. And I didn't see the Institute to Recombobulate or I forget exactly what we were naming your think tank that's going to go along with the recombobulation area, but
yeah, my fake think tank to put out studies that support everything I say, but I haven't quite launched that
okay,
yet. Maybe so in the next campaign cycle.
Still workshopping that one.
Recombobulation.
The Institute for Recombobulation. That one didn't quite make it, but some of these names are kind of interesting groups and very much the same front four as you discussed, the Citizens United decision lining up with the graph. These organizations are kind of, I'm not going to call them a front for dark money, but they're essentially a front for dark money, are they not, Dan? With names like Fighting for Wisconsin or Right Direction Wisconsin PAC. Like, they're...
Yeah, they're all so ridiculous. We have to mock these names. Like, whether or not they put out something that perhaps we might agree with. Like, for example, the Alliance for Common Sense was the group that was for the Democratic Governors Association. They were the highest single spender in Wisconsin for the last round. They spent more than $26 million. And you know, the Alliance for Common Sense, it means nothing. It's nonsense. It was the Democratic Governors Association. The Republican Governors Association funds were split up into a couple different ones. The Right Direction Wisconsin PAC, the ACC Wisconsin PAC. I believe there was another one somewhere. And the State Solutions is another one. It's just so ridiculous. You go through the list here, A Better Wisconsin Together.
Americans for Prosperity.
USA Action. It's just all this nonsense. It's just absolute nonsense. Garbage names.
See,
that mean nothing.
I don't understand why they have to make up a fake name for the Republican Governors Association then. Just say the spots or the spending was paid for by the Republican Governors Association. It just seems like an extra additional step.
Yeah, but then, you know, you have this kind of, you know, the Alliance for Common Sense or the State Solutions or whatever. People might not know that it's aligned with one side or the other. You know, all those attack ads going after Tony Evers for crime nonsense. You know, you don't know where it's coming from. So it might be from an independent group that has, you know, a distinct interest in solving the issues. But it's all just partisan hackery.
It's a lot of
the
just
cloak of nonsense names.
Yeah,
it's so funny.
The fact that that's a hurdle that, oh, we want to be less transparent, so we're just going to create these nonsensical names, and that's what we're going to go by for these. And I don't know this for certain, but I would assume a lot of, as you pointed out, those really negative attack ads, those are probably the ads paid for by those groups that are putting up names to kind of shield the work that they're trying to do in those political attack ads.
Yeah, I know in the Senate race, the Uline's attack ad mechanism was the Wisconsin Truth Pack, which, you know, ran some of the most racist ads that we've seen in Wisconsin this century. So, you know, it's just a great system. It needs no reform. We should not take another look at the issue of money in politics ever again. It's working great for everybody, right?
Well, it's working really, really, really good for the people that designed it. So, and other people that don't necessarily agree with it, but are making out like bandits as it is designed. I would love to see some reform here. I have a feeling that we're going to have kind of a trend here in Wisconsin where we will just continually break spending records election cycle after election cycle until we get that reform, and it doesn't seem like that reform's coming anytime soon. One of the things that we could reform here in Wisconsin is if the, say, makeup of the state Supreme Court race changes in this upcoming race. There could be many different things viewed, but it seems like the Supreme Court race that is happening in February and April is going to follow this trend as the last fall's gubernatorial race and exceed past spending amounts. What are your thoughts? You got any insight for what's going to happen when Wisconsinites go to the polls 3 weeks from today, Dan? I know we're not making any predictions here, but this primary is coming up sooner and sooner every day.
Yeah, I think that, you know, just to stay on the topic of money and politics for a minute, I think the Journal Sentinel had a story the other day from Molly Beck talking about how this is the state Supreme Court race you know, particularly after the primary, once we get to the general election, it's just poised to shatter any records for spending on a state Supreme Court race. You know, I think we were just talking about 160 some million for the governor's race. I think they were talking about something north of $50 million for the state Supreme Court race. It's going to be a wild one. You know, I think what is pretty interesting right now is that there seems to be a little bit more infighting on the right among the two conservative candidates right now. There has been some real back and forth between the supporters of former state Supreme Court Justice Daniel Kelly and Waukesha Circuit Court Judge Jennifer Doro. You know, I think talk radio veteran Mark Belling has been a guy who has been in the Doro camp. I think he even suggested that Daniel Kelly drop out to support Doro when she got into this race. She had this rising star. Kelly has, of course, pushed back on that. And, you know, we saw a column from a Kelly supporter who is on the court, Justice Rebecca Bradley. She wrote an op-ed in the Waukesha Freeman saying that Mark Belling is wrong about Daniel Kelly. You know, you've seen a lot of back and forth on social media between some of the Kelly supporters and some of the Doro camp. So it is very interesting to see this race unfold. We are 3 weeks away from the primary right now, as of today. And so, you know, I think there is probably more infighting on the right among those two camps than what we've seen on the left between Janet Protasiewicz and Everett Mitchell. You know, Protasiewicz, her fundraising numbers were way, way ahead of everybody, including Mitchell.
Yeah.
And so I would have to imagine that makes her the front runner to emerge as the liberal candidate in this race. But Mitchell is a very compelling candidate as well. He's gotten some very key endorsements, particularly among progressives in Wisconsin. And, you know, I think him being so far behind in the fundraising, we didn't maybe see the campaigning as much, but that seems to have kind of taken a step up over the last couple of weeks as we get into the home stretch here as well.
One of the things I've been thinking about as I've seen the Republican/conservative infighting over the two conservative-leaning candidates rise steadily over these past couple of weeks as well. Do you think that there is a possibility here that the enthusiasm to support one or the other of the conservative candidates could elevate both Kelly and Doro over and the finish line and be the top two candidates? Or do you believe that that's not a particular outcome that's possible 3 weeks from today?
Yeah, I don't see that. I don't see that happening. I think my best guess on this right now, considering that Protasiewicz is planning to go up on TV with ads, we saw that news story in WisPolitics last week. I would imagine that my best guess right now would be that she gets the most votes and that second and third will be the two conservative candidates. And I think Mitchell will probably round things out unless things change drastically over the next few weeks here. But I think with Protasiewicz's plans to be up on TV and advertising, you know, I think she'll probably be out front, and then the two conservatives candidates will be duking it out for that second place spot as the top two vote getters will move on to the April 4th general election.
And it's very interesting to see those fault lines between the right side of things, because it is the outgoing justice who's not seeking re-election, leading to this vacancy, Pat Rogensack, endorsing Doro on her way out. So it's very telling that Doro's gotten that endorsement. Dan Kelly seems to be getting a lot of the other endorsements from the former Governor Walker camp. It seems like there is a very, very strong split in conservatives here in Wisconsin for which Supreme Court candidate to back. And I just didn't know if something like that competition amongst them could see elevation. But I'm also agreeing, I haven't seen a whole lot of infighting between the liberal-leaning candidates running for the state Supreme Court seat 3 weeks from today.
Yeah, and I think that is probably a product of who these candidates are. You know, Daniel Kelly was on the state Supreme Court for a time. There's parts of his record that you can plenty to criticize there from his record. And I think, you know, with Doro being this newcomer rising star in the race, you know, she gained so much attention through the Daryl Brooks case. So people are really going to have her in the spotlight to see if she can, you know, use that national platform to take a step up to, you know, be a potential front runner in this race. She's clearly hit some stumbling blocks over the last couple of weeks.
Just a couple.
So who knows?
Yeah. Folks, you are listening to Dueling Tangents. I'm Luke Mathers, joined this Tuesday afternoon by Dan Schaefer of the Recombobulation Area. We're going to continue to recombobulate and maybe squeeze in a couple more tangents as well. One more segment left in the day. If you want to share a tangent, 844-967-2789. We're going to be right back. Welcome back to Dueling Tangents. I'm Luke Mathers, joined on this Tuesday afternoon by Dan Schaefer. You're listening across Civic Media. If you want to take us with you on the go, download the Civic Media app wherever fine apps are downloaded on your smart devices, the Apple or Google Play Store. Search Civic Media. You'll be able to jump from station to station across our network and listen to Civic Media wherever you are if you're outside of the listening area. And Dan, one of the excellent things I love to bring you on for as well is your insight for the Milwaukee Bucks outside of the political takes. So jumping to the Bucks now, they're going to be hosting the Hornets this evening, correct? I want to say Charlotte's coming to town.
Yeah, another home game.
Another home game. So, and then later this week, they're going to host a 9 p.m. game. I'm not a big fan of those ones. It's, I believe, Thursday or Friday night. They got a 9 p.m. tip, and I'm like, I'm an old man now. I can't stay up that late watching the game. But
see, I'm a night owl. Those games are for the sickos like me. So I like those. You know,
I used to start
the game after the kids go to bed. I can settle in with a drink and watch the game.
There you go. So that's who the NBA is creating these games for. Is you are the clientele,
yes,
that they are having 9 p.m. Milwaukee Bucks tip offs at. Perfect. Well, sounds like you're going to have some good plans for that one coming up later this week. But the trade deadline's coming up. So before we get to some like actual news around the Bucks, let's do some speculation. Trey Crowder, do you think he's coming to town? Do you think this deal's going to get done?
That's been the rumor. It's been the rumor all year that Jay Crowder, who is weirdly not playing for the Phoenix Suns this year, is just kind of. You don't always see that from like a kind of mid-level guy to hold out, but kind of that's where he is, the former Marquette star.
Does Ben Simmons count as mid-level, or is he a high-level holdout?
that's more of a high-level disaster that Philadelphia had to deal with. Poor Philly, you know.
Hey, but, they get a Super Bowl appearance, so I'm not going to feel too bad for the sports fans of Philadelphia.
That's right. I was watching the NFC Championship the other day. I was like, oh, I don't know who to root for. I kind of like Jalen Hurts. I like the Eagles team. That means Sixers fans are going to be happy, so I don't know if I can really get excited about that. Somebody who hates the Sixers, so I don't know. I'll be rooting for Pat Mahomes in the Super Bowl, I think. But regardless, I'm adopting your tangent here. I think there's a pretty good chance the Bucks end up trading for Jay Crowder, bringing him back to Milwaukee, where he played his college ball at Marquette. There was a trade reported, a reported offer from the Athletic saying that I think it was George Hill, Jordan Wara, Serge Ibaka, and a bunch of second round picks for Jay Crowder, which as a Bucks fan, they wouldn't have to give up Grayson Allen to get him. And that's kind of been their rumored trade chip going into the deadline, which is just 1 week from today now. I think that'd be a pretty good deal. Get Jay Crowder in. He could play kind of that PJ Tucker role, coming off the bench, knock down some threes, play some defense, scrap it up a little bit. I think he'd be a good fit.
Yeah, for those listeners that aren't too familiar with the basketball world, Crowder was on the Phoenix Suns team that the Bucks defeated in the NBA Finals 2 years ago. So, and he showed a lot of that PJ Tucker type mentality in that series against the Bucks, and I think a lot of Bucks fans were pretty mad that he was playing as well as he was during the finals in 2021.
Yeah. He also played for the Heat the year before when the Heat beat the Bucks in the weird bubble playoffs. Mm-hmm. And Jay Crowder got super hot from three in that series, as players sometimes do against the Bucks. But, you know, if they were able to bring that over, a guy who could play some defense, knock down some threes, bring a little toughness on the defensive end, I think that'd be a good deadline addition for this Bucks as we get into the home stretch and, you know, they compete for another championship. I think they got a great chance to do it.
Yeah, I think a healthy squad with the addition of Crowder would be pretty tremendous and allow the Bucks to make a pretty good run. One of the Bucks-related stories, kind of taking a tangent from the Bucks talk, is the streaming service that allows Wisconsinites to watch the Milwaukee Bucks. Bally Sports, in kind of an interesting dilemma, looks like they're heading towards bankruptcy. This is, I've been having a feud with Bally Sports since YouTube TV and Bally Sports couldn't get an agreement. So it's been a whole thing of whether or not I want to actually pay for Bally Sports to watch the Brewers and the Bucks. And now they seem to be heading towards bankruptcy. What are your thoughts on this? And do you have any insight with what's going to happen next for how viewers can stream their beloved Milwaukee sports content?
Yeah, I don't think there's going to be any immediate interruption for like this Bucks season that we're going through right now. So, but it's a really interesting story, isn't it? It's like they Sinclair owned Bally Sports buys up all of these sports stations, and the product has been pretty bad. I think it's been a drop. It's worse than what Fox Sports was. Mm-hmm. I use an app to watch it on my Apple TV and Roku, and it's just always crashing and whatever. So it's a pretty bad product in general. They made some terrible decisions along the way, made their subscription fees so high that Hulu Live and YouTube TV decided not to pay for them to be on their service. Yeah. And then Bally turned around to try to sell this $20 a month subscription to get on their terrible app. And no one's going to pay that, for a barely functioning app that only has only can really use during the games. So at that point, there are ways to watch live sports without paying for them.
Yes.
Those methods are a little bit easier and cheaper than what Bally Sports is offering. So I have to imagine many people have gone that route.
I mean, I'm not going to outright say that I'm aware of people that do that, but I can understand that consumers not happy with the service being put out by Bally Sports find alternatives is what I'll leave it at. But it's interesting to see that this is all what happens when Disney decides it wants the intellectual property to add to its Marvel library and then sells off all the sports things. And Sinclair bought it and then tried to offer a really, really... local sports broadcast should be a very easy thing to sell. I feel like a subscription service for the era of streaming that we are in, this should be a home run. And
that's the thing. It's never been easier to stream things, and they make it so difficult.
Yeah. And so I feel like there was just a couple of concurrent wrong decisions or poor decisions made that led to all of a sudden bankruptcy coming for Bally Sports and their parent company. Any insight on how the Bucks are going to do tonight?
I'm predicting a win.
All right, predicting a win. I think I'm always predicting a win. I just never say it out loud too often.
I always say, as long as we have Giannis, I like our chances.
And he's been on a tear of late, so I'm hoping for a good game. Enjoy the 9 p.m. tip-off later this week, Dan. You'll earn that drink after you put the kids to bed. Dan Schaefer of the Recombobulation Area. Check out the Recombobulation Area and subscribe. Dueling Tangents will be back tomorrow at 2 p.m. We'll talk to y'all then. Thanks so much, Dan.
Thank you.